Well, good morning. This is Let's Hear It. I'm Kara Lawrence, and today is a really significant day on my calendar. It's the chance to spread the word about an extremely significant new set of awards for jazz artists and presenters, and it all ties back to someone who meant so much to the Kalamazoo music community and well beyond that. His name was John Stites, and we're here to present and introduce you to the John Stites Jazz Awards. In the studio with me, board members Sandy Schaefer and Tom Knifick. Welcome to you both. Thank you for coming.
Good morning, Kara.
Hi.
Nice to have you here. The awards are significant in terms of how generous they are and how it's been structured to continue for at least 10 years, is my understanding. And I'm trying to get a sense of what this means to the jazz world, which, yes, there are some international competitions, there are prizes out there, but in the balance, I'm wondering what the significance of this this new set of awards means. And Sandy, why don't we start with you?
These will be some of the larger awards that are available to jazz performers and to sponsor jazz events. They range in value from $5,000 to $25,000. So they're fairly substantial. And they are the result of John wanting to promote more people's interest in jazz, but also to encourage people who are emerging artists to move into the professional ranks and give them the opportunity to do that through this funding.
Anything you can add, Tom?
Sure. Well, in scope, you know, a big part of my job apparently in life has been to raise money for the institutions that I worked for. And that was a self-appointed task. But, I mean, really one of the biggest that one could tap into nationally was Chamber Music America, which includes jazz under that beautiful umbrella. And their bigger awards were certainly not as big as the awards that we're offering. So just to give you some scope, because CMA is considered one of the great sponsors of small ensemble music on the planet. And so this competes successfully with that even.
The three of us knew John Stites, but I certainly don't want to let listeners who didn't know about his work be left out. So why don't we open this beginning portion of our conversation by talking about John and his significance, and a little bit about his personality, perhaps. One of the greatest accomplishments, I guess, is the thousands and thousands of albums that he recorded on Stewart Avenue.
220 Stewart.
Yeah, yeah. Sandy, would you, I know that you have gone through much of what was left in the his collection, his library, and it has taken a while to, you know, get to the bottom. Can you give us a sense of the career he made in recording?
Well, John started out as a performer. After he graduated from Western, he started out playing trumpet and toured with the Americana Brass all over the United States, Canada, Bermuda. But he decided the performing career wasn't really his forte. And after also a successful career as a photographer here, where he did a lot of work for the Kalamazoo Museum, archiving old pictures that couldn't be replicated by anybody else, he decided that he needed a real job. And so he went to work for Upjohn in their audio production group. And he spent 22 years doing that. But his real love was the recording. And he started recording before 1986. But in 1986, he got very serious about it. And he started the studio on Stewart Avenue by buying his pride and joy, which was the Yamaha C7 piano that he bought specifically for jazz performances because it's highly regarded in the jazz community. Mm-hmm. Over the years, he spent untold amounts of money perfecting that studio and helping it give a sound that was appreciated by all of his the people who recorded there. And he did professional quality recordings for everything from people who were trying to do performance tapes to get into music schools to very famous jazz performers who came here to play at Miller Auditorium or with the Western Jazz Orchestra or in other capacities. So he was very proud, I think, of the work that he did over the years. And I think he was the premier choice for people who wanted to produce a professional recording in this part of the country.
His legacy is tied up in this new set of awards. Was that something that he was planning as he knew that his time was closing in?
Well, John never married and had no children. So essentially, he needed to figure out what he was going to do with the bulk of his estate. And at the time of his passing, only one of his siblings were still alive. So the balance of the estate, he wanted to give us some guidelines on how he wished to have it distributed. And so in the last year and a half or so of his life, he spoke to me of the things that he wanted to attend to that would allow him to memorialize his interest in jazz in this area. And he gave us the guidelines for what he did want to fund and what he didn't want to fund. And a lot of it came from his work as a recording engineer, wanting to make the difference for the people that truly wanted to make jazz, a musical career in jazz, their goal in life.
I would add that, given the pandemic, it seems that this is just coming out now, but we started this 4 years ago in earnest, meetings with John when he was still with us, of course. And this would have been launched, I guess, two-ish years ago had it not been for what we've all been dealing with. So it's been a long time coming in terms of, fine-tuning and polishing the ideas and getting it ready for the launch, And I would also say, how lucky was I that we moved here in 1987, just after the studio opened, for realsies. And, because we considered him the Rudy Van Gelder of the Midwest, or certainly of Kalamazoo, and Rudy being maybe the jazz engineer of all time, and also recorded from a home in New Jersey. Because I don't know, how many people out listening to us now realize, but in the late 80s in Kalamazoo, there's a lot of things you couldn't go out and do that we can do now. There weren't even particularly many good places to go out and eat, so you learned how to cook. It wasn't this and that, But there was this boutique, highest level quality recording studio, which is the synergy that comes from having that available. And the relationship that ended up building from that, and then of course the music that was recorded and the artists that we got to share with John, and that legacy is just amazing. I think if we had moved here earlier or later, we wouldn't have gotten in on the ground floor and had that amazing relationship.
Those would have been the days of maybe digital audio tape or
pre-digital. I'm so glad you brought that up, because both in my career and I guess in Trent Kinniston, who and Steve Zagree are the two guys that brought us to Kalamazoo, and for John, we transitioned from vinyl to CD together. And the first recording that I made as a CD, and the first one that I'm pretty sure John made as a CD, if I'm off by one, I apologize, but I'm pretty sure it was this first one, was the WJQ, Western Jazz Quartet's CD, Firebird. And he had to actually borrow a friend's – we had to go to one of his colleagues from up John's home to use the computer, because nobody had the computing power, nearby, and certainly he didn't and we didn't, to do what you need to do after you get it down, And so we'd go to this gentleman's – I think it was an engineer or whatever he was, and we'd go to his home and work on it literally in his – and he'd be there to help with all the different codes and things. And that was – late 80s, I think it came out in 90. And precipitously, that CD won the 5-star Downbeat Award, which is given out so rarely. And the very first CD, actual CD format that he produced and we produced, and it got that hit out of the park, which also made it for Downbeat one of the CDs of the decade, which also meant one of the CDs of the millennium, because it was like going into the — they do it every 10 years. They count all those up. And so I mean, think about that for his career, you know, for our careers, but for him, you know, to start that way in the digital domain, you know.
John Stites was the audio recorder and owner of Arcadia Recording, and now the John Stites Jazz Awards have just been announced, and the website, johnstitesjazzawards.com, is taking applications from musicians and presenters. Let's talk about that just a moment. From hearing about John and his work from Sandy and Tom here, while John preferred to let others take the spotlight, I feel there was a strong point of view that helped create the excellent level and the special quality mm-hmm. of these recordings. For example, you said he never quit balancing out that piano to get the exact sound that he thought was right for a record. Perhaps you could talk more about this point of view from a person who wasn't seeking spotlight, but still somehow made everybody sound better than maybe they would normally.
Absolutely.
I think there's a couple things. One is anyone who's ever been recorded is usually disappointed because they hear themselves on the recording different than they think that they actually sound. But John made them sound better than they actually were. And we actually had we have hundreds of letters attesting to that from various people. In fact, I was just telling Tom this morning that I was going through some of the letters, and one was actually from Tom's son, who recorded with John years ago. So the students that John recorded for the performance tapes and for their early careers, all the way to the famous people, would send him a note expressing their appreciation for the quality of the recording they received. But the reason I think he did such a marvelous job was, for one thing, John had perfect pitch. Perfect pitch is actually very rare. And he never liked using the devices that you have in the recording studio to improve people's pitch. So he would work with them during the actual recording. When he heard that it was not quite right, he would say, hey, do you want to redo that? And so as a result, I think he got better quality out of people because he was actually hearing their work in progress. The other was he was a super perfectionist, and he would not quit working on the editing until he thought it was the absolute best that it could be. And he was adamant that he would do the editing himself. So it often took him some time, but it had to be to his standard before he released it. He also took copious notes, because a lot of people did these recordings over years, because many of them didn't have a lot of money. So maybe they just did them when they had some funding available to them or a grant that they'd received. And he was the reason he took the notes was so he could set up the system exactly identically and get exactly the same quality. So even if the tape or the CD had, you know, 12 tracks taken over different periods of time, each one had identical sound quality.
You couldn't
and
tell.
I have all those notes archived. So, I mean, it's quite interesting to see the level of detail that he provided to his colleagues as he was making these recordings.
I would add that, you know, in several of the recording reviews related to our work, there would be notice of the sound quality in the engineering, which is pretty rare. We go through a lot of record reviews and see how many talk about the studio or the engineering or that, you know. It's very rare, and yet on multiple occasions we found that we were being commended for his work on our behalf, you know. In terms of specificity, I mean, you learned right away, don't touch a thing, you know. Don't even, like, a little bit of dust on the boom stand, don't touch that either. You're just like, you know. It was basically like a living, I don't know what the word was, but it's just like this entity that you just came into and you know, were bathed in the possibilities of those sounds and everything like that.
Respecting another band member in the room or something like that.
Exactly. And then
the
also,
setup.
You know, regarding, you know, people giving accolades, you know, Billy Hart, who just won the NEA Jazz Master Award recently, just came out maybe a week ago, and I called to congratulate him, mentioned this, and he was like, may I... You know, what can I do to? So he's going to give a quote or something for the website and for maybe other things. And I know other artists, major artists, are going to be excited to do that too. The memory is profound and worldwide.
Well, these are awards, and they need to be awarded. So let's hear about who can apply and why. Is it restricted to West Michigan is probably the first thing to ask.
Technically, it's not. However, the awards are actually in two categories. There's an artistic development award. This type of award is for individuals or ensembles who want to take their music to the next level. And so they want to do something to enhance their career. This may be that they want to study with someone who is a known expert in their particular instrument or their particular type of jazz that they wish to perform. Pretty much the individual can describe what this would do that would, or the ensemble, that would allow them to take their career to the next level and ensure that they can make the jump from music being a side gig mm-hmm. to a professional position. The other type of award is for a jazz event or a jazz project. This could be a concert or a competition or any number of other projects that someone might envision that would allow us to express appreciation for jazz and enhance the understanding of jazz within the community. This one is more favored to the Southwest Michigan region because we would obviously like to see the work done within this area. There is a requirement that for either award, that if you receive the award, you think of a way to recognize John and this organization as part of the requirements for receiving the award. Because the real goal here is John's work was his children. This is his legacy. And the real goal here is for people to use these awards as a way of remembering what John provided to this community and what he meant to the musicians who worked with him.
One thing you didn't mention, and I just wanted to ask, is could this jazz event or project award also include making a recording?
It could, only as a sidebar event. That can't be the goal. The reason is John had many friends who were within the recording industry here within this part of the country, and he did not want to have his money used to favor any one studio over another. So that creates some difficulties in just creating a recording and having that be the end product. But if the recording is part of a larger endeavor, it would theoretically be, you know,
it wouldn't exclude the applicant.
It would be available. Because the real goal is to choose a project that reaches a wider audience.
Applications are available right now at johnstitesjazzawards.org. And I would like anyone listening who's interested to navigate to that site right now. And perhaps we could take a listen to a recording, a special recording that Tom brought along. And I'll have Tom introduce this for us, the recording of RD for RK.
Absolutely.
And again, that's johnstitesjazzawards.org. Take a look at the awards, the applications, about John, the organization. It's all there at johnstitesjazzawards.org.
One of the great ways to remember him is that we were excited to bring international artists here to record there, which, you know, wouldn't normally be the case in a town the size of this, right? And even if there are studios that might not be the ones where you would record this niche music. Jazz is very specific. It's a chamber music, but a very specific chamber music. And so to be able to have this and to be able to bring international artists here and have them love the sound of everything was an amazing point of pride for us being here. I will even say that I've had a hard time recording since he's stopped, since we lost him. It's been, you know, I have several projects that are in various stages that I've just, you know, it's just a big sigh for me to get back to them, you know. So in any event, I've gotten to do over 30 records with him, which is nothing compared to the 3,000 he did. I mean, it seemed to keep me busy all the time, yet he 1% of his opus, right? So, but I thought of a couple that had, you know, greater meaning than just you know, a CD. Sir Roland Hanna was a dear friend and one of the great musicians to come out of Detroit and had certainly an international career. And we were close to him through our work at Interlaken before getting here because, you know, as a jazz and classical musician, I loved combining those things. And so did he. He was trained at Juilliard, a little bit at Eastman and then at Juilliard. And so we found each other that way. And when we had a chance to record with him, it was like, we'll do it in Kalamazoo. We could have flown to New York where he was, but let's do it here. And as fate would have it, it was his very last recording, the last recording that he made. There was some conjecture that he made a live one in Tokyo post, but I'm 99.9% sure this was the final one. It's a beautiful, beautiful record of Renata's called West of Everywhere. And this is a piece that he wrote for Renata. And it's really a duo. He kindly had me play bass on it, but it's really all about, you know, his artistry, his piano sound in Renata. And this is one of the recordings that people mentioned, the studio sound, in reviews of the recording.
That would be Renata Knifik, Professor Emerita of Western Michigan University, your partner, of course. And yeah. The album is West of Everywhere. Thank you.